Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg.
Hey, this is Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me for the Songs of Note podcast. In this podcast, we talk about stories behind songs and music and bands and all things music. And so this is a cool episode. If you listen to the show, you probably know that I really love Nirvana. There's been several episodes I've done on the band, and some of my favorite ones have been on the band. And so the Kurt Cobain has always been especially interesting to me. And I don't know if it's just the mystery of what could have been, or it's looking back and seeing the quality of the music that came out in such a short time, or the fact that he was also such an interesting character in addition to all these other things. Whatever it is, he's a fascinating character to me, person to me. And if you are familiar with rock journalism and rock photography, then you've probably seen the photo. There's one primary photo of Kurt Cobain where it is a close-up on him. He's looking into the camera, and he's got real dark, like, circles under his eyes, and he looks very serious. But it is probably one of the most iconic photos of Kurt that I've ever seen. And it's one of my favorites as well. It feels like you're looking into him or into his as a person, whatever it is. Something comes through in the photo, and so I went down that rabbit hole of, man, who shot this? And I want to know what happened on that day, and what were they talking about, and how did that story come to be? And so I was able to get in touch with Martin Goodacre, who took that photo, and it was before the band was even anyone. I mean, they were playing in Europe, but this is way before Nevermind, and he didn't know that this guy was going to be, you know, huge. That photo ended up being on the cover of, I think he said hundreds of magazine covers throughout the year. So it's an iconic photo, and it's a very cool story getting to hear from him what that day was like, how he took it, and what else was going on there. Martin has also gone on to launch a new record label, and their launch had this really cool new album called Das Wasteland, Berlin Volume 1 and 2, and he talks a little bit about that. But he also talks about how he got to see Joy Division back in the day. Come on, man. Anyway, really cool interview, super nice guy, but I'm going to link to all his things in the show notes, but just very much enjoy this interview. Let's head over there now. This is Martin Goodacre. Well, Martin, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast today to chat. I'm so excited to hear more about your story and to talk with you today.
Okay, pleasure to be here with you.
And you're calling from Berlin, right?
I am. Yeah, I'm in Bad Schillenweg in Berlin, South Berlin.
Small world. I'm talking to you from Texas, so it is cool to get to connect to different time zones and talk about a universal thing, which is music. Before we start, can I mention the Patty Boyd thing? Because you were talking about how you would listen to the Eric Clapton episode that we did recently, and you said you actually ran into her one time. Is that right?
I did. Yeah, I bumped into her in Jamaica when I was there doing a travel story, and I didn't know she was going to be there. I arranged to meet Howard Marks, who Mr. Nice, and they were together there. He told me not to tell anyone about that, but since he's passed away now, it doesn't really matter. And I hope Eric's listening.
That's so crazy. Anyway, that was a cool like aside. I was like, oh man, we just talked about that on a recent episode. So that's very cool. Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about yourself, like growing up, and how do you remember being interested in one in photography? And then two, in rock music. I mean, those are the two things I wonder about. Did you have any inkling of that as a kid that you wanted to be involved with that, or not at all?
Well, I always loved photography. I wanted to do art, but I was hopeless. And with that love as well, my hometown's a very small town, but it was on the circuit for gigs. So I got to see some really great gigs really early on.
No. Ah, wait. Where are you from?
Well, that's a place called Malvern in Worcestershire, where Worcestershire sources is from. I got to see some great bands. You know, early bands, all of the punk new wave stuff at the time. So it was like, you know, the Undertones, the Jam. Saw Joy Division there.
Wait, you saw Joy Division?
Yeah, they played in my hometown.
Oh. Oh, I'm so jealous. Are you serious? How was it? That's what I love. I love Joy Division.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was a bit of a shock at the time there because I've been used to seeing bands like the Undertones, Jam stuff where it was packed and everyone was jumping around like crazy. And then Joy Division came along and it was like a half full a ballroom and everyone's just sort of standing there in a long black cloak, sort of, you know, stroking their chins basically. You know, but we were listening to the album had just come out and he died I think a month after that gig.
So. Oh my gosh, you saw one of their final shows too? Holy cow.
Yeah, it was
wow.
Good. I mean, yeah.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a bit of a classic. The ticket's still around. Like I've seen the ticket on the internet. But to slightly change the subject as well, I saw another person in New York once that nobody believes I had ever seen. That was Ema Sumac. So Ema Sumac,
really?
In New York. Yeah, which was bizarre, you know.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you got into music as a kid, and then when or younger, and then at what point did you pick up a camera and say maybe I could do something with this?
Yeah, well, it was at a point where I had to sort of decide that I should do something. You know, I was in my mid-20s by then, and I hadn't really had a proper job. I was a squatter in London most of that time.
What's a squasher?
A squatter. Yeah, we basically took over empty homes and lived in them and had a sort of community. And I lived in this one big sort of commune place, which was an old ambulance station, and we put on gigs there. We put on the first English Butthole Surfers gig on there. And
did you really?
Yeah, that was an absolutely mind-blowing gig, really. It changed
my life. Wow.
I've never seen anything like that before. And Jesus and Mary Chain's first gig and a few other things like that. So I was always involved. When I started working as a freelancer for NME, it was a dream job to get in free gigs, get free records and free hotels and flights to America to come photograph bands. You know, one of my first jobs was I flew to New York to do Kitchens of Distinction, and I'd never stayed in a hotel before, you know, let alone gone to a restaurant. So it was a big life changer for me.
Do you, after all your success with photography, is there one moment or one photo or one like thing when you think about it, it's like, this is the thing that really stands out as being something that you're super proud of? Is there something that sticks with you?
Well, but yeah, well, obviously the Nirvana shoot was really life changing. It still affects me now because it's always, people want to talk about it and, you know, like I said, the BBC have just done a TV program and use a lot of pictures because it's called When Nirvana Came to Britain. So maybe you can get to see it. It was quite good, actually.
Nice.
But, you know, really, it's just like, you know, meeting people I never thought I'd get to meet, Angus. I photographed Angus and Malcolm from AC/DC together, which was absolutely genius.
Oh, wow.
And they told me that they had played in my hometown, which I didn't go to. I was a little bit young. And, the batteries failed on my camera, and I couldn't get. I had to get them up by the window for a few shots. And as I left, Malcolm, Angus's brother, said to me, "Hey, Martin." I said, "What?" He goes, "Don't forget to keep your batteries charged, mate." That's the best.
What a quote! Oh yeah, man, I love it.
Especially coming from someone like AC/DC. You know?
No kidding.
They were sharp. You know, they were funny and they were sharp. And I've always had a good time meeting these people. I've rarely been disappointed. Jonathan Richman once wouldn't let me take a photo of him because I worked for the NME and they'd said something bad about him about 10 years before or something like that. And
oh, so funny.
I never listened to his records for about 10 years. Now I listen to them all again because I've got over it.
That's great. Okay, but,
another time I got invited to photograph the handover of the Moshimo charity. It was a Romanian Angel charity appeal to Moshimo. And so I got to meet George Harrison and Ringo Starr together with their wives, Barbara Bach and Olivia Harrison. And George Harrison was always a big hero of mine, and I got him to sign.
Yeah.
I got him to sign a photo, which I'm looking at now. It's on the wall, and he spelt my name wrong. He spelt my name with an I instead of a Y. And I said, George, look, and you can see, and he just changed it and then did a little squiggle. But it was great meeting.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh.
My archive's quite big. I actually worked quite hard for about 10 years. And because NME was a weekly, there was a lot of jobs going. If you imagine four weeklies a month, and, you know, there's probably five or 10 gigs each week that we have to be covered. So there's always work going. And also, because I was new, I was getting all the new bands. You know, that's why how I ended up photographing Nirvana and then a lot of it.
Oh.
Techno people. And just went on like that. And another big one for me was the Beastie Boys. I got to photograph a little gig in a cellar of a skateboard shop in London.
Oh, man.
It was great. And then also I was in a band, actually, and the Beastie Boys let us support them, which was nice.
Really?
Really great. Yeah, experience. So, in a small, it was when Paul's Boutique had come out, so it was very small. You know, they lost that huge popularity that they had with License to Ill, and mm-hmm. and they were, you know, trying to get sort of more credible in a way. But they still had a massive hardcore family following, and that was incredible. I photographed two or three more times since then. Always great fun, you know, really. So. I used to drive a London taxi. I bought a London taxi to drive around. I have no idea why. I just liked the look of it, and to actually have one was good fun. You get a lot of people in it, and I photographed the Beastie Boys in the back of it, and they used it on their the last compilation album they've just made.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was your photo. The photo you're talking about. That's awesome.
In my car. So
that is totally cool.
I had a few famous people. I had Prodigy in that car, the Raincoats, Brew House.
Man, that's awesome.
It's a bit of a classic car.
Man, that is totally cool. That is great. Okay, so the thing that the way that I first came in contact with your work was through Nirvana. I'm a huge Nirvana fan, and I love photos of the band. And you have one of the most iconic photos of Kurt Cobain, which, for the people listening, the photo that I'm describing is a very, very close-up of his face. It looks like he has eyeliner or something on, and very somber look. What can you tell a little bit about, like, how did you get into rock photography in the first place? I'd love to know. But and then also, like, how did you end up working with Nirvana?
Oh, okay. Well, I got into photography sort of quite late. I'd been unemployed in England for about 9 or 10 years, and I was a squatter in London, and I had to sort of, you know, make a choice to do something with my life. And I was really into music, and I was really into photography, and I started to do photography, you know, with the idea to become a street photographer or a war photographer. Of course, none of that happened, and I went into the NME and Melody Maker and Sounds, which were free weekly then newspapers, newspaper magazines in the UK.
Right?
Yeah, they were selling 100,000 each at least, or at least the NME was when I was with them. Of course, they're all gone now. And the NME. First of all, Melody Maker bought a photo of Screaming Trees of mine that I had taken backstage at a pub in London called the Fulham Greyhound, where they were playing. And
nice.
And I thought I was going to love them, but then they went quiet and NME started. I didn't even have a mobile phone. So I went to a phone box, you know, a couple of weeks later, said, "Where have you been? We're looking for you." And they gave me three jobs to go and do there and then. And I sort of never looked back, really. Huh. It was a dream job for me.
Oh, how cool. So that's how you got into like bands and photography.
I feel very lucky about it. It was a great bit of luck, really. There was a good line of people at NME, and they sort of let me get on with it. I've never told once how I should take a picture. You know, they said, right, what are you doing on Wednesday? Okay, do you want to fly to America to blah, 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 you know? And I go, oh, yeah, right. I had never even eaten in a restaurant before I started working for NME, and then suddenly I'm being looked after by record company PRs and, you know, bought meals and staying in, like, Phillips Stark hotels in New York. And
man, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was great. And yeah, it was a real eye-opener. Then, I got spoiled by it all.
Right, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, so is this early 90s? Is it around the time period?
Yeah, 1990. I started, by 89, late 89, 1990, I started working for NME. The Nirvana shoot, interestingly enough, was in October. It's nearly 31 years, so it's October, 1990. And they were just on tour. I think they were on tour to Tad Again, second tour. And this time they had like a bed and breakfast. There's just been a show in the UK about it called When Nirvana Came to Britain, which is quite interesting, showing talking about Nirvana, the whole story of Nirvana's relationship with the UK. That was quite nice, and they used my photos, so it was all very, very emotional, really, seeing some old faces.
I bet.
I hadn't seen a lot of these people on the program for like 20 or 30 years, and it was very, very interesting. I was supposed to be on the show, but COVID quarantine prevented me from going to London. Really, yeah, annoying, but anyway.
Well, what do you remember about the band at the time? Were they huge yet? Were they just on the verge of that?
No, three of them were staying in one little basement room, and they were pretty well. I got them outside, but no one else did because it was cold outside, and they were sort of like worn out, tired. I mean, they were quite fun. I mean, Chris was really friendly, you know, and Dave Grohl hardly said a word. He's like, he's kind of shy, and Kurt didn't really say much either. Really, and just by chance, you know, I thought when I'd finished, I thought, can I just get you, you know, all to do a picture of your solo? And that's how I got the Kurt picture.
And man,
you're very lucky, really.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a very simple photo with just a £100 camera and a basic 50mm lens, but the grain and everything worked really nicely on it. And I caught some in his eyes. It was like I tell people a story, but I felt connection through the lens when I took the picture, almost like a sort of vortex. Like in The Evil Dead when you go through the trees. I felt that, something like that, and it went bam, and I thought, cool, what was that? You know, and I didn't think much of it. So I don't think anything like that is related to the picture. But either way, anyway, I. When I came to print it, it was just like, wow, this is what I got into photography for musicians. I realized, you know, this was a fantastic photo. But, you know, they weren't famous at all then. Never mind, had still like 10 months to come out.
Oh, man. So you have this amazing photo of this guy that you're like, who knows if anybody's going to like really, if they're going to be big or not, right?
Well, exactly. It was never used, but... at first, you know, until later when he started going the wrong way, and people like they sort of used it because, you know, he looks like a sort of desperate character, you know, in the picture.
He does. Well, it's interesting what you described as the thing that you feel like he's reaching through the camera. Like, I'd say that your photo does that, and then there's one other photo that he has where he's playing live. And that I had as a poster way back in the day, but he looks like he's looking through his hair and he's looking at into the camera, and almost it looks like a sense of desperation. It feels like he's reaching out to you, which is what it feels like. And I'm sure that, like you said, that's the feeling that was coming through. So that's really interesting. But to be able to document that in a way that is there for the ages, in a way, is very interesting to me as somebody who loves music and can say, man, you really helped capture the essence of somebody in who's work that so many people appreciate. I think is very cool. I'm sure I've seen that on magazine covers at this point, right? I mean, was everywhere.
Well, when he died, I remember, I had about 17 front magazine front covers that, you know, that month alone. And, you know, since then it's been used all over the place. It was quite a life changer for me, a bit of a door opener.
And I bet.
And yeah, it became what people know, you know me for, really. It's only one little photo shoot I did when I, you know, sort of started photography as professionally.
How cool is that? Well,
you know, people say, "Oh, you've got to photograph my band now." Okay.
They still do. You made him look good. Yeah. Everyone don't get us,
me,
right?
Yeah. Everyone expects me to make them look like some sort of Cobain character. But, but he looked great, you know.
That was totally. Yeah, well, how many times did you photograph the band? Was it just that one time?
Yeah, just that one half an hour I had them. I didn't even go, I've never even seen them live. The night before, I couldn't go to the concert where they played, so I missed that. I wish I had, you know. I'd have loved to roll a film of them live.
Yeah. Well, how cool. Well, that's amazing. So thank you for sharing the story, because like I said, that's when I think of iconic Cobain pictures, that is in my like small handful of very, very favorite ones, and I just love it so much. So you did photography, and now you've moved into starting a record label. Can you talk about that process and what made you kind of get into all that?
At the beginning of the 2000s, I moved to Thailand and lived in Thailand for 15 years and did nothing, just because I was sort of like I needed a bit of a change, and then I was sort of rescued and I ended up in Berlin, and I just realized that I hadn't been very creative for a long time. So I started, you know, sort of trying to do more photography. And then I had done a record label before in the 90s, a small one. We did a few singles, and I just thought, well, why not do that again? And that was a very silly idea. It was in the middle of COVID. had a lot of time in my hands. Now I'm stuck right in the middle of it, really. And I started with two other guys, and both have left Berlin, so I'm just on my own now.
Okay. Well, so the album that I have been listening to and that I really love is this Das Wasteland, Berlin Volume 1 and 2. And it's really fascinating to me. I'm coming from a different part of the world, and I know music can be different, but it really, like, a lot of it just resonates so much with me. I just really enjoy it. Can you talk about this album and the story behind getting that going?
Well, it started off as a single vinyl only album, and it ended up a double gatefold sleeve. And because we had too much for a single album, and then suddenly we had not enough for a double. So Tim Burgess of the Charlatans sort of saved us in the end. Got an Anton Newcon mix track of the Charlatans, for Tim Burgess solo song, which is one of the best songs on the album. I mean, some people have different, you know, like different tracks and stuff. But it was quite fun trying to find. Nobody was doing gigs, so I had to go on the internet and I was calling people up, say, who do you want? Who would you put on a record of a local Berlin band or something to do with Berlin? There's an association with Berlin on every track. You know, for instance, the track from Stolen, even though they're from China, the manager and producer is a gentleman called Mark Reeder, who's been a long time Berliner. He was here when the war was up. He used to work in a HMV, and then he ended up in Berlin, and he's still here and making great music. Imagine a Chinese electro band.
Man. Well, so this is really a compilation of Berlin related bands, not necessarily all local, but in some way related to Berlin. Is that how you would phrase that?
Yeah, I mean, some have got a slightest link. Like, you know, even if it were like with the Tim Burgess track, it's because it's Anton Newcon mixed. Anton Newcon from the Brian Jonestown Massacre, that is. And he's been living in Berlin now for a few years. He's a well-known Berliner, so that was our theme on that one. And there's other sort of, you know, there's really only one German sang song, Otto von Bismarck, which ends the album. So we get people ask us about that, but
yeah,
it's a very expat city Berlin. You know, it's you know, you don't really need to speak German to live here at all.
Well, the thing that I thought as a listener was when I read the title and I was like, Das Wasteland, is this going to be in a different language? And I was like, no, this is all English. It minus the last song. But the way that I read it described, which this is from a review, which I thought this was really cool. They said it was a compelling sonic snapshot of Berlin's scuzz rock underground, a fitting blueprint laid down by Lou Reed, Bowie, and Iggy back in the day. I was like, wow, what a really interesting way to describe a compilation of songs. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. I want to hear that.
Sorry, my phone fell over. Yeah. Well, hopefully that the review will help, because as you said, it sounds like it might be a German spoken album, but obviously it's not. You know, Berlin's not really a rock town in any way. It's more like a techno town, if anything. You know, the clubs are the driving force here, although they're still closed. So it's not really a rock town. So, you know, it's a struggle to get things going, but I'm finding more and more good stuff, you know, and there are some great bands from Berlin as well. So
it's so fun to be able to find a hidden gem of a song or a band that people don't know about yet and be able to like introduce that to other people. Was that part of this process for you?
Yeah,
one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. You know, like Stony Sugar Skull and the Hello Pity and local bands that, you know, should be bigger than they are. And I wanted it to be like not only an introduction to us, how we can make records and make really good ones and with beautiful sleeves, but also to like introduce people to a few local bands and trying to help them along the way. So, I mean, you know, we're going to do more anyway. So I want to do an album with Hello Pity, but I'm not sure if I can persuade them at the moment.
Nice. Well, so for people listening, if you're interested, the ways that you can get in touch with this specific album that we're talking about, one, you can follow them on at Das Wasteland on Instagram. You can go to daswasteland.com, and I streamed it from Apple Music. That's my preferred place. But you can also, the vinyl is coming out soon. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, the vinyl at the moment is stuck in customs, but we have, I've got a cellar full of it here, and I'm doing mail order, so I'm popping down the post office. Anything from the website, you know, comes straight to me, and then I just post it off. But we've got a few hundred stuck in customs at the moment.
Okay, so they're getting there eventually.
They'll be in the shops anyway. Well, they'll be in the distributor in the UK, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. We'll see how it goes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, like for you, are you somebody that was a fan of some of those bands like Lou Reed and Bowie and Iggy? Like, did you like that stuff growing up no?
Of course. Yeah. Huge Bowie fan and Lou Reed and of course Iggy. It's good that Berlin's got a little bit of legacy because Bowie's like a couple of years, he spent sort of living here, or was it a year? I can't even remember. So, I mean, I make a pilgrimage to where he stayed and, you know, go to the...
Is that right?
Yeah. It's just a apartment.
I love it. I love rock monuments. That's cool.
Oh yeah. Well, we got Nico's buried here. I've been to her grave. That's a great one.
Oh wow.
She's buried right out in the forest in a grave that's not attached to a church, because it was used for in the Industrial Revolution. A lot of people in Berlin got very depressed and committed suicide, and they couldn't be buried in a graveyard in a church, so they had to build this extra graveyard, and for some reason Nico's buried there.
Wow, I've never heard that. That is wild.
Yeah.
Well,
still a candle there. Still a candle burning for her.
Well, for people that are interested in what else you're doing, what else do you see as the future for the label? Like, are there other projects you're looking forward to or hope that you can take on?
Yeah, well, we're working on the release of a New York electro guy called Zachary Allen Starkey, and that hopefully is going to be our next project. Just to put him out on vinyl would be nice. I mean, my big love is to make really great sleeves and really good, really nice vinyl that people want to collect. So that's sort of the idea of it, really.
Well, I love it. And I love the cover of this one, because instantly it's memorable. I mean, you see it and you're like, oh, yeah, That's beautiful. So you've got to see it yourself. So for people listening, you can go to doswasteland.com and I'll put the links on the show notes. Do you have any funny stories of photos you've taken along the way?
Well, I've shot gigs and I've got to put the camera in, the film in before. I used to process my own stuff and I basically stripped a whole Sunday night at Glastonbury, which didn't go down well, but I still carried on. Another time, not really a technical thing, but I one of my heroes was who influenced me to take photos was Henry Rollins, because I had seen him play and with the Rollins band, and it was mind blowing. I thought, God, I should photograph this. It's amazing. So a few years later, I actually got to photograph him, and he was kind of like, you know, I think I was a bit nervous. But anyway, I never use lights, so stupid. And I took a light. I wanted to do it really slick because it was for a proper magazine, not the NME. you know, which you could do anything for it, and much more relaxed. I needed something like that. And so I photographed him all through, and then there was this, like, he had this huge spot on his nose, and I finished the shoot, and he was like very quiet, and it was a bit of a sort of charged atmosphere. And anyway, he rubbed his nose, and this spot just vanished. And it was all over his hand. And I said, I thought that was a spot. And he said, Americans don't have spots; they only have bullet holes. And he goes, I said, I need to do the shot again. He goes, no, I'm hungry. I need to go to the gym. I said, all right. apparently, he told the PR on the way out that he never wanted to see me ever again.
That's a great story.
Yeah, I've still got the shot. Oh,
that is great. So the ones that you did any magazines use that with the smudge on his nose?
Yeah, he must have, because I didn't have anything else.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's not that big, but I noticed it at the time.
He seems like an intimidating character.
Yeah, he wouldn't intimidate me now, but he'd been sniffing a flower, and he had some pollen that was on his nose.
I love it. That's great. Martin, I just appreciate you coming on and be willing to talk about your photography and also the label and this new record. I think people are going to love it. It's Berlin Volume 1 and 2 in Das Wasteland. And I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed it. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.